everyone, and welcome to the 25th episode of the Next Stage Press podcast, where we talk theater and playwriting with the various artists of Next Stage Press. I'm your host, Gene Cato. Today's guests are two powerhouses in the entertainment industry and have devoted much of the last decade in not only bringing their talents to the stage and screen, but also bringing their voices to combating the ever-mounting global crisis that is climate change. Using their talents and connections on the East Coast and West Coast to facilitate productions and readings that have attracted the likes of some of Hollywood and Broadway's A-listers to participate has been nothing short of a modern miracle, considering much of this was done during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm speaking of none other than L.A. producer and actor Tana Frederick and New York playwright Gina Russell Tracy. Over the course of our conversation, Tana, Gina, and myself discussed the development of Gina's play Starlight, how getting stars behind the project in order to raise the piece from a mere play to theatrical activism was a challenge, and how using performances to save the world, often from itself, has become a mission that they simply can't afford to lose. It was a brilliant chat with two brilliant women who were on a mission to using their lives and their art to help save the planet. So let's go to that conversation. All right, everyone, here we are with a very special version of the Next Stage Press podcast. This has got to be the first time that we have not had a one-on-one interview. Right now, we are three people that are about to be talking to one another. And our playwright, Gina Russell Tracy, has invited a bunch of people. So as we were talking about a few minutes ago, this can end up being a block party and anyone could stop by. So if anyone new drops in, we'll let you know. I am on right now speaking with Gina Russell Tracy and Tana Frederick. They're going to be talking about Gina's play Starlight, which is part of a climate change trilogy that she's been working on for a while that has had a lot of support. And we will get into all of that. And Gina, you can take us through the development of that. And Tana, you were a part of it as well. I think that it would be, we always like to start these things off just talking about whoever's in here, talking about your history a little bit, just so that the audience out there at large knows a little bit more of who they're listening to. Gina has been a playwright for quite a while, and Tana has been an actress and a producer out in Hollywood. And so we have two completely different perspectives that are all coming together as Starlight is making its way onto the stage and through publication at this point. So to start it off, Gina, we'll start with you. So just talk a little bit, tell us a little bit about how you got started in theater and ultimately what took you from the theater bug and took you into the world of playwriting.
My ego took me into permanence. And other than film, you know, I moved my way through Tana's very difficult world of acting and then directing and producing a little and teaching and all of that. And I just decided that I had more to say than than roles were written for women, and with subjects that mattered to us globally. So I decided that I would give it a go. And I started with writing children's theater, and then I moved into serious drama. And the trilogy came about because of my experience as a 13-year-old. Santa Barbara, California had, the reason we have Earth Day is because an event that happened in Santa Barbara 50 years ago, in 1969, actually. And I was there, I was 13. So I'm sort of part of the legacy of the environmental movement as a child holding those dead birds as a result of the greed of the oil company. So in my lifetime, this has always been something that really mattered deeply to me. And as I became a mother, and the better I got at acting and the better that I got at producing and the better I got at writing, I realized, like many people, that this is the number one global issue that we have. We have so many, many issues, but like Leonardo DiCaprio and Tana Frederick, it just comes to the front, and Peter Kalmus, it just has gotten to the point that we realize that we are on borrowed time, and the smaller, I don't want to call them smaller issues, but the sexist issues and the race issues, all of it is all tied together with equality and survival. And if we don't survive in this time of climate, of the climate emergency, none of the plays will matter. None of the acting will matter. None of the theater will matter. Nothing, being a parent won't matter, because we are on borrowed time on both coasts and all over the world. The droughts, the fires, millions of people are dying already. And so this is my effort to forestall and be part of the legacy of stopping it.
You're still out on the East Coast, right? Do you live out there full time right now?
I am out here full time. I feel like I'm bi-coastal and tri-coastal. I don't even know. The people contact me from the UK. I'm taking just a handful of private students. I think, when you start getting into New York and Hollywood and Chicago and Colorado and Tennessee, all of these places start leading us around the country, and then we start jumping off. My dream is that we really, and that part of that is why the United Nations choosing the trilogy, and Starlight was part of that, to be associated with the United Nations and having all of those performers gather. We couldn't get Tana. She was busy. She flew out from Hollywood and gave the world premiere reading of Permafrost. And Permafrost makes Starlight look like Act One. It is not a little journey, a one woman, a two-person show. Starlight has the advantage of 5 to 8 characters, children, a crone who can be a male or female, a senior, and through a family story. But once you start getting into the history of 1969 and the oil spill and our abuse that we have taken from the fossil fuel industry, and then we end up at Permafrost, it's a Tony Award. Jean, it's a Tony Award. And Tana was the muse. I was joking with her after we worked on Starlight in Santa Barbara in a reading. Each star was bigger than the next, and she was the next. and the biggest thing happening on that stage. Actually, Starlight, I called around Hollywood and asked who was the most environmentally conscious female on planet Earth. And in Hollywood, and they said, everyone said Tana Frederick. So I didn't know Tana from Banana. Tana from Banana, I didn't know. And then the more I learned about her, the more I went, oh my God, she's a perfect fit. She's like my right hand if I were left-handed. And everything, she's the most spiritual actress I have ever seen in my life. And I felt that I was pretty much like that. So writing for myself was like writing for her. So Permafrost and 1969, they were written during the pandemic. There was no commotion anywhere. But I said, Tana, it's done. We did a Zoom call with Jeff Kober, who just won an Emmy Award as the Cave Cat. And it was very casual. And then the next thing you knew, we were introducing Tana Banana to from Hollywood. She took the Hollywood sign with her. She drug it down the street, up there on the lower side and brought it in. And I'm telling you, your playwrights like Barbara Kahn were in the audience. And they said that right there is what the best of the American theater. Just imagine it without lights, like Our Town, nothing on that stage except for an actress, or imagine it with everything thrown at it, with the Lort theaters really taking it by the it could make a difference. So I'm just so happy she was here was able to be here today. We're competing with the fireworks for her.
Should be our own little firework in that.
Anyway,
let me ask.
So that's sort of the story. It all sort of it's in my bloodstream, and I'm called to do it. I think just as you're called, Jean, to do it, Tana is called to do it. And the actors that we found along the way, each one, they're called to do it. Jeff McCarthy, you know, he did Urinetown, and, you know, he couldn't wait to do the reading of 1969. Alison Fraser, nominated for 2 Tony Awards. You know, Tana was my number one girl, you know, and Permafrost was written for her. So, you know, Alison just said, I want to read the leads in all three because I'm not going to get the chance again because Miss Hollywood signed it will be coming back here, moving into the city, you know, and doing whatever she has to do, wherever she has to do it. And that's the story of being sort of bi-coastal, tri-coastal. So now we add Colorado to the mix, you know, the big Denver. Can't wait.
Denver, that's right. Hey, Tana, let me ask you something on this because Gina just brought up something about what she was saying when she was shopping this stuff around and you had this reputation of being the most environmentally conscious person, you know, a woman out in Hollywood that is working out there. What has that been like being in California with all of the things that have been going on that clearly the fires out there that have just been ravaged? I mean, we see pictures of that all the time on the news. And for somebody that is so steeped in environmentalism on that and working out that in that area in this industry, what has it been like actually carving and working on your career out there when all of this is happening literally in your backyard?
That's such a good question. I think it's really been one step forward, two steps back, and you just have to continue charging forward. You know, it's something I've had a nonprofit now for over 15 years. And it's something where, you know, there's so many nonprofits and which is beautiful. And there's so many people covering so many different issues. And I think the key and the strategy in this community in California is to band together and just keep pushing forward because with all of the different things that arise constantly in California, you have to keep moving forward or it just becomes too devastating, you know? And then there's the idea of, as an artist, creating some sort of mental wellness by performing and doing what you can through performing and through the arts when, you know, it feels like you're not doing enough through activism with plays such as Gina's, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does perfectly. It completely. Gina, let's talk a little bit about Starlight because that we, you know, Starlight just became published here. And you put it out there that it's part of a trilogy, all right, of plays. And I'd like for you to talk a little bit about the origin of that play and just how that play fits into a larger context of a trilogy of plays and what it was like to craft a set of plays that has such a large scope to it.
Yeah. Historically there aren't any. This is like the Star Wars of the environmental faction here. I mean, there's a place for everyone. And if people want to see one show, they're going to want to see all three. That's the end of what I'm hearing. But, so Starlight was the first one and I didn't know where I was going. I went to the beach, the first scene is children, 3-3-year-old children talking. And I just took what they said and wrote it down. It was just reality. And that's where that language came from. And then they wanted to talk and their families wanted to talk. So I decided that Michelle, it was about time that we had a superhero that was a young ingenue environmentalist. And that would be Michelle and the mother, who would be ironically working in a factory that is polluting the ocean, which in the town I wrote this in Clinton, Connecticut, on the beach there, Unilever is there. And I know I shouldn't name names, but you can't go to have little lobster dinner without, at that point in time, the lobster traps were on the shore and they were empty and trees were growing through them. Bushes were growing through them because there were no lobsters, because the big secret in the East Coast was that they were being killed. They were dying. The eggs were dying, pesticides. It was all taking place, but we were importing them from Maine. So we didn't have local, that seafood was starting to be affected. And you could go down and just take photographs of the pipes with the garbage, just, you know, being distributed out of the pipes from the factories and from, you know, the water runoff. So eventually we did find out that, you know, on the East Coast, the lobster, they were dead, and the water was warming at the same time. You know, it was also, and Tana was out there surfing, you know, in Hollywood, having a good old time and being, you know, beautiful and getting sunburned and fighting the fight her way. So all of these things, like Star Wars, they were happening in different, in an entire universe. The permafrost was melting. I just wasn't really hip about it as how fast and how devastating that would be coming at us. But underneath it all was the history of me in 1969 and my experience of falling in love and meeting environmentalists and being handed a business card by the vice president of Shell Oil as in terms of activism, and being offered a job to shut up. So I decided I wouldn't shut up. I would write about being asked to shut up. So that's where 1969 goes. And I took the little business card and I put it in my, you know, my little pocket of my shirt. And I said, wow, you know, I guess I feel like Princess Leia here. So in the larger trilogy, they fit together because they historically cover 50 years and the future. And the future has become the present. So it's the past, the present, and the future all working together. Starlight was the first. And I was so bottled up with rage, Gene, much like Leonard DiCaprio, like, well, we are, that it just came out on the page. I couldn't stop it if I tried. I had three bottles and Starlight was done. So I had a mother, I had a father, I had these children that were spiritual guides. You have children, you know what it's like to have these little kids. They say yeah. Such truthful things. They're connected to, you know, so many, and animals. How the crone showed up, I can't tell you, but I can tell you that when we did a reading of Starlight in Santa Barbara with Miss Tana Banana, she sat on that stage and she got it internally as the award-winning actress that she is, that the crone was her. The crone was the mother. When her daughter was dead and her husband was dead, who was left was the old mother, was the crone. And so 1969 is kind of a flashback. Even though Starlight was written first, 1969 is the first play in the trilogy, even though it was written second. It lays the foundation and it jumps forward 50 years to the present. And then we have Starlight, which is right in the middle, like the lobster roll in between the two pieces of bread. And permafrost is the warning of the present and the future. Although environmentally, it's the past, the present, and the future. So permafrost is the total breakdown, the total mental and ecological collapse that we are have faced or will be facing. And who comes to place in that is not the crone, not the three spiritual children, you know, or the crone, is a cat. Because when they discovered the cave cat, I said, who doesn't love a cat? And what kind of cat is this? And how come the cat gives advice like go to higher water, you know, go to higher lands, make sure you have fresh water? This is the simplest survival things in the world. And the cat has the last word in the trilogy, the cave cat. I never met a cave cat, Gene, but it wanted to talk, so it did. And what was so interesting with Tana doing a reading of, let's say, permafrost, she had all that Starlight under her belt. She had 1969 that she had read, and she inhabited, she wanted to do both. Like, what kind of crazy, like, what are you talking about? You can't win, like, you're going to win two Tony Awards at the same time for doing the cat, you know? And the thing, she wasn't the only one, because Alison Fraser wanted to do the same thing. And I said, wait a minute, maybe there's something to this spiritual guide in permafrost. There's something, but I'm telling you, to watch an actress take a two person or two creature project and want to make it the same, make it communicate from the it like a talking dinosaur, like as if we are the dinosaurs, as if the third extinction is ours, and this is the character that's going to save our ass, is this crazy little cat, you know. And I was off on a tangent of, oh, Ben Vereen would be great, you know, Krista Catali would be great. I mean, how many? It could be male, female, I don't care, you know. It could be Jeff Kober, it doesn't matter. And Tana wanted to do both, and I saw her do like split personality, do both and give the space and then seam it together. And Alison wanted to do the same damn thing. So when you take the top actresses in the world and they want to do that, you know, there's something like, I didn't write it. I didn't write it. I served it, but I didn't speak. It was through me rather than of me.
Well, I'll turn
you're around. A writer. You understand that.
I do. I'll ask Tana this question, because this is, as someone who has played in these, speaking out there to actresses that might be looking at these roles in the future, especially with you having the environmental background that you have and all that, whenever you open these things up and you look at it, what was it about these particular plays that you felt like you had to do it? You felt like you had to actually perform the play, because it was there was something more than just reading that on the page. What drew you to it?
Gina is just one of the best writers out there. I mean, she's so prolific. And I think one of the best things you can do, and one of my reasons for doing anything on stage, is to create some sort of change in the audience for when, number one, to have people feel less alone when they walk out, whether that's because of some, you know, cause that they feel less alone and less isolated about, or emotionality that they feel less alone about. And, you know, Gina's words are just, they're poetic, they're obscenely genius and so languid and beautiful. And I can't say enough about her. She's going on and on about me. I'm like, I just can't say enough about Gina's work. She's like 5D, I guess. And it's really delicious material to work on. Any actress would be so lucky as to take her material and work on it. It's devastating. It's devastating, devastating, devastating material. I mean, it really is. It's an isolated scientist on an island who's, you know, where there's nothing left. It's Armageddon, slightly Armageddon material. But, you know, we're actresses. We look for that.
Right.
I mean, we don't. We do it so that we don't have that in society. We do that so that we stop that from happening. And we do that to create thought and to create pause in people. So, you know, or hopefully people do that to create change. And Gina's work evokes change. And that's what we need right now. I there's only so much that we can do through thought right now. I think it's emotional. Writers are so necessary because we need emotional change versus just educational change. And emotional change through good writing is more powerful, I think, right now on this planet than anything.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm interested for both of you. This is a question actually for both of you. Since it had this benefit reading for, it was called Project Save the Surf, Save Our Surf. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that project, both in terms of the actual reading and the project that it was benefiting. And then, you know, afterwards, either one of you, as you're going into it, what were some of the responses from the audience members that were in attendance after it went up?
Well, my nonprofit is called Project Save Our Surf, and that's, you know, it's globally based, it's state based, and it's in our backyard. We do simple things like beach cleanups. And then we also do programs globally, like water filtration programs. We do things like taking kids who are troubled in their high school, you know, having trouble skipping classes to surf and stuff like that. And we do leadership programs where they go, they install the water filters in, you know, Vietnam or somewhere South America. And they're the ones, and then they get a week to surf, you know, so they're going into third world countries and communities, and they're the ones installing the filtration systems, interacting with the kids. So, you know, they have this cool leadership shift while they're there. And we do camps out in the Irvine Mountains, where a lot of fourth and fifth graders whose school systems have shut down science programs, science trips, now get to actually take a science trip. So Gina was kind enough to let us utilize the piece to have a fundraiser and you know, rally around that piece as a fundraiser to raise money for those programs. So I think it was beautiful. There wasn't a dry eye in the house, which was good.
Yeah.
In this case. Right, Gina?
Yeah, and it was starlight, which was kind of the calmest of the waters. And I mean, to see people like break their necks to go, wait, a woman wrote that? Wait, like a scientist? Like, this wasn't a Pulitzer Prize winning, you know, in my spare time, but this was like a breakout voice. Even my uncle, who was an art director in New York, sat there. He came up from Hollywood and came up to Santa Barbara, and he was like, my niece wrote that. God damn it. You know, he was so like happy. And he worked on, you know, in New York with the top ad agencies in the world. And he was so cynical and he felt refreshed. I think as Tana was talking about the mental health aspect of needing the refreshing hope and to write. Gene, I'm telling you, you got the Star Wars periodic table. It can't be done without great effort. And it's way beyond us. And I think that's why so many people are not writing about science through mythology and through the family struggle and journey. And somehow it just wanted me to touch those bases in starlight. But I have to tell you, to fly from the East Coast, land on the West Coast, show up, and there's Jenny Silvers, and there's Tana Frederick, there's Gregory Harrison, there's Amanda McBroom. It was star after star after star. I just sat there and went, oh, this is going to be like, we should film it. This is a major movie just right here. They nailed it. They killed it. The difficulty with writing when you get to the top of the talent pool is they cover up any mistakes. So you don't know what you need to rewrite or not rewrite because they inhabit it with 1,000%. It's like, Carrie Fisher doing, when the fit happens, they jammed it just, it could, you know, they didn't know whether, we call it shit on line their watch, but the audience didn't know. And every single time Starlight is in a reading or anything, people are like, holy crap, where did that come from? Excuse my French, but there's nothing like it because people are just not writing science mythology and the family struggle all at the same time. And I think I must have been meant to be in Santa Barbara during that oil spill. And I must have been meant to write, like, it's like the Dead Sea Scrolls. I feel like sometimes I'm writing Dead Sea Scrolls and I'm writing for these actors and actresses that are just, they're iconic. They're the top of their field. And no, you could give them bologna on a sandwich and they could read the yellow pages. and make you cry. So imagine when you give them something that they feel can save their life. Forget about it. It's just, you're just watching the fireworks. It's like July 4th is the perfect time to talk about Starlight, because every time actors take a hold of this, they find it in themselves. Because I do believe you as a father with two children, Tana with these two dogs that look like sled dogs, you know, they are ancient frigging creatures. The love goes in and pulls it out, because it's mysterious. It's sacred. It's sacred material. I guess that's the word. That's how I would put it. And we are just called to do it. And how do you go from the, you know, movie stars that you never met, and they made me cry. They made me want to fight harder. They made me want to finish the trilogy. There wasn't a trilogy. There was only a trilogy as a joke with Tana. I'd write her a one-person play, and she said, yeah, okay, I dare you. And I went, yeah, okay, in it to win it. Yeah, all right, okay. So we created a bit of history, you know, and how it ended up, you know, being in New York, an association with the United Nations during Climate Week, 2000, you know, a year ago, not even a year ago, September of 2021. And Al Gore was the opening speaker. So even though he wasn't in the audience, he was connecting and supporting with everything he has done to support what we were doing in you know, Theater for a New City. And it was free. And it shouldn't be. And it was in a pandemic. So I don't know.
Let me ask you a question on that, because you bring up the fact that you finished these things during the pandemic, and yeah. do you think, and that there's a possibility that as we were trying to come out of the pandemic and he was in it, were the plays actually helped by the fact that everything was so chaotic during, you know, COVID-19, people were dying. We were having all these other things that we were just trying to grapple onto something that maybe the plays gave them some sort of hope of maybe there was a way one day that we actually could save something, because there was a lot of loss that was going on during the pandemic. Do you think that the idea of that, of just trying to be able to save something, aided it? As we were coming out of the pandemic, if that makes sense.
Well, it was a switchblade, and it's a fine line, because on one hand, these actors, you know, and Tana coming out from Hollywood, she flew in a plane during a pandemic, you know, right in the height of it all. And we hadn't seen faces without masks for, you know, forever. And I had actually broken it too. And there's, and Tana's like, you know, we went to a little room. We had like 5 minutes to talk before she actually went through it all. And I went, oh God, yeah, I wasn't able to go to the dentist yet, because I'm not going to doctors. I'm not going to dentists. But there we are in the American Theater doing this reading. And, you know, it was like an emergency room. We were in an emergency room. And the emergency was the soul of the American Theater. Broadway wasn't even friggin' open. You know, this was like just this crazy little window of time. I didn't even ever meet Jeff McCarthy. You know, I called him. I said, do you want to put your life on the line and in a pandemic and take a mask off your face and do a smaller role than you're used to with Urinetown or the things that you're used to doing in the city? Well, he's from Santa Barbara. And not only was he from Santa Barbara and I was from Santa Barbara. Wait, there's one more. Sam Chuchivis, who was in John Houseman's company at Juilliard, was a step ahead of me. Sam was like in his 70s, and he was the witness character in 1969. But to get the Santa Barbara transplants in New York, okay, it was bigger than me. I don't care. There were 10 Broadway stars on that stage doing a reading. And the only reason Tana wasn't doing all three leads was because, you know, timing with other projects and things, and just, you know, we thought for sure that, but theater producers weren't really coming to see theater. The theater, because Broadway was closed.
Right.
For all purposes. It just wasn't happening. Off Broadway was where the brave you know, souls were. And this was the night. It was September, if you can imagine, 2021.
Yeah.
It was at the beginning of the open. So did it give them hope? Oh, yeah. And I think it prepared everyone that, you know, Starlight is it's like the art town. It's like the modern art town. Starlight is like the modern art town. I'll take Thornton Wilder on with art town. I did it twice any old day of the week because it tells the same story of an art town, except this is our planet. This is our world. And Thornton Wilder, you know, he lived in Connecticut. He's down the street at Yale. And everyone thought he was like nutty to strip everything away. And to write about the life of a family, you know, the lovers, the father and mother in Starlight it's devastating when the mother goes to slap her daughter. I shouldn't give it away, but when she goes to slap her own daughter and her daughter, you know, there's a knife involved and Shakespeare, bring it on is all I got to say, because seeing these actresses do this, when you've got a mother who loves her daughter, her only child, during all of this, during a pandemic or through the end times, all of that, who is so ready to split open, Lady Macbeth style, bango, film it, take it, you know, get an Academy Award, take it to the streets. One of the actors, Michael Morata, who did the reading of 1969, I know Michael for like 30 years. We did Hair together in New York. And he's gotten like 17,000 views of a monologue online. That's cuckoo. Do you know what I mean? People are just like, everybody's like watching, but they're tempted to do our town because it's safer. That's the only reason it's safer, you know. But the kids, the high school kids and the teachers, the college kids, they're so done with our town. They're in the streets protesting. They're like, bring it on. And so that's what the trilogy really says, is we value you now. Not just beautiful Emily in our town or George, where you're going to raise chickens. Now it's like, George, you're going to stop the glaciers from, you know, washing the graves, your gravestone away in Boston, in Miami, in Hollywood, in Santa Barbara, in, you know, around the world. Miami is ground central. Like the question will be is, where do the world premieres, like, where do they get to go? Because that will be, we don't know the answer to that question yet.
Well, I can tell you right now, because I'm originally from Houston and I'm worried about my hometown being underwater at some point, you know, just because it seems like every time that I go down to Galveston, the beach just gets a little bit closer and a little bit closer and a little closer to the seawall every time that I'm there. So one of these years, I hope that if it ends up being underwater, it won't be in my lifetime. But I don't know. It gets a little scary from time to time when you start to see the effects on a lot of this stuff. Let me ask, this is another question for both of you. So we're talking a little, we're talking a lot here about theater, using theater as activism. And we know that theater as activism can be really powerful. And we've also seen some projects over the years where the message overpowers the entertainment. So how do you balance working the message while keeping the story tightly bound in a theatrical construct so that it is delivered to the masses that way? Because it sounds like that, you know, from the readings that you've had and everything, you've had the, you know, people have been very moved by it. And in order to keep the message stuck with people, but keep the story that it's framed in, how do you balance that? Either one of you, either as an actress, a producer, or, you know, as a playwright.
Gina?
Well, all I can say is, people are expecting a beautiful bottle when they go to the theater, when they come to the theater, and when they find the message was for them. you know, I heard a reading in Fullerton, and I don't know how it works. I don't always understand Luke Skywalker, you know, who Yoda is, who the crone is, but why that training, why this is a Lord of the Rings universe. I don't quite understand it myself. But to have women who are Indian, who are fully geared up, you know, and covered up, say, this is the reason I came to America. You know, you've written something that speaks beyond, you know, is entertaining, but also touches their soul. And there's not enough work that does, Gene. There's really, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I go to the theater and I go, oh my God, you know why? I'd rather watch Saturday Night Live. I'd rather watch John Oliver. I mean, I'd rather look at the news. I can watch a protest where they're burning their bras again 50 years later. There's so much competition for I think what Tana mentioned is the mental health aspect, is that we are a depressed nation and a depressed world. And what's interesting about these three plays is they build on hope. And I don't know how the rainbow shows up. I don't know how the light shows up. I don't know how the design shows up. I don't know how the money shows up. I don't know how the theaters show up. I have no idea, really, except that it's there and it's tangible and it's mysterious and it's spiritual. And it's a gift that is given to us that are allowed to experience Starlight for like a short period of time. You know, 6 weeks of rehearsal, 8 weeks of rehearsal, writing it. It wrote me. I didn't write it. That's all I can say is I can't tell you. It's like the Dead Sea friggin' Scrolls. There's something else going on. When I get to meet the cave cat, I'll tell you, that'll be the end for me. I'll be like, oh, that's what the cave cat, you know, and we had just rescued a cat, as a matter of fact. And I felt a huge responsibility to take whatever ancient truth was in this cat that we saved its life, but it saved ours. Who rescued who? You know, how Tana Banana had these two sled dogs. You know what I mean? She could have had chihuahuas. She could have had poodles. Who knows? She could have had German shepherds, you know, that were police dogs. You know, they could have been any kind, but they were sled dogs. And, you know, they are stuck in Hollywood where it's hotter than hell. And they're Tana, don't they have to have like air conditioner strapped on them? And then you feel guilty that you're trying to cool them off, but they're shedding all over the place and they're panting. They belong in Alaska, the old Alaska, which
I think, anyway. I think if I may.
So how do you do it? It just does it. But you bring people like Tana Banana. Every actress has a sense of spirituality or they wouldn't bother. They wouldn't, you know, somewhere deep in them, community theaters, high school theaters, they all have it. It's a matter of, do they get to, do they get the training and do they get the opportunity and do they die without do they need to be in theater? Like, do they need to be a nurse or do they need to be a nun or what do they need to be? And the people that are actresses or doing community theater or educational theater or professional top end, you should see her film work. You'll go, yeah, she's a sea witch. Yeah, there's something else going on. You know, goddesses are, you know, she jokes with me and calls me a goddess, but she's the goddess. And there's so many, you know, Disney capitalized on those princesses and those goddesses for so long, but now it's moving into a new frontier. And I think that that's what Starlight is like, the new hope.
Right.
So they're the balance. I don't know where the balance came from. It's through actresses like Tana Banana and, you know, Jeff Kober. I mean, why do we love a guy who could kill you? You look at him and he's going to convince you and win an Emmy that he could kill you, but he's not like that at all.
Tana,
think Gina's underplaying herself in terms of her storytelling ability. And Gene, you know, that, and thank you for being a writer, because there's not enough amazing writers out there. I think that when it comes to issues, the story is the thing, you know, and the issue is second. always the issue is whatever you're writing about, it can't breathe unless you have a good story, unless you're a brilliant storyteller. And Gina's a wonderful, wonderful storyteller. And then, you know, you can, that's how mental health, you know, seeps into her work. And that's how environmentalism comes into her work. And that's how so many issues, it's not just an issue. It doesn't become an issue piece, you know, it's about all these, it's littered with all these different things. It's not just I'm being bombarded by some annoying message kind of thing. You know what I mean? And that's so easy to do. It's so easy to do. It's so easy to turn it into some obnoxious, you know, piece, but not with a great storyteller. And there's just not, especially in theater, there's just not enough. There's not enough wonderful storytellers out there. Or maybe there are, and I just don't know all of them. But I feel bad that I said that. I know a lot. I know a lot.
That's but right. Let me ask you, because I think we kind of jumped over it a little while ago, but what was the response from the audience members whenever you did the reading?
People were really devastated. I mean, without giving away the ending, I guess there is hope, but there's also sacrificial hope involved. And I think, you know, I think what Gina writes also sort of does tap into some sort of Greek mythology in a way. And it's an idea of, you know, sacrificing. Her work kind of has something of like sacrificing something very precious in order for something to bloom. And so I think people get kind of like, I think that takes people's breath away because it has to do with, sacrificing, losing something precious, very precious to us in whether that's a child, whether that's our hope, in order for our hope and our, and future generations to grow. And that's, you know, I think that's where we're at right now is sacrificing ourselves and sacrificing a lot more than what we are in order for our earth to survive. So I think that in that respect, her writing is spot on. But I think people do get a little taken back and it is hopeful, but I do think people should be a little smacked in the face a little bit when you're talking about this subject matter. It shouldn't be all sunshine and rainbows, you know?
Yeah. So what is it? Theatrical tough love.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally.
Did I just coin a new phrase? Did I?
I think you did. I love it.
That's it. Next time you guys see me, I'm going to have theatrical tough love on a t-shirt rather than the Star Wars periodic table of elements. That's what's going to happen on that. All right. Well, believe it or not, we're coming up on time here on The Last Thing. So I want to give both of you an opportunity to just kind of let everyone know what's going on right now stuff that you can talk about or whatever. What are you working on right now? And here's the thing. If we grab the other two plays and we put the entire trilogy together through Next Stage Press, what we need to do is we need to get everybody that worked on it and all that and just have a free for all and just see what we can do there. And then just we'll package them all together and then we'll just get everybody's experiences with that. So Gina, let's do that. All right. What do you think?
Well, I can only tell you what it was like to look at Jeff Kober and to look at Gregory Harrison as they were waiting like two little boys, like, thank you for doing this. And I was like, I have to see a friend of mine that I did Peter Pan with, you know, and that I did all these other shows with, who drove up from Seal Beach, you know, to the reading, and my son said, Mom, that was Jeff Kober. That was Gregory Harrison. They were standing like two little boys, like leading men. You're talking about the leading, you know, leads in television shows, films. I mean, just the, you know, beautiful, beautiful people, beautiful, you know, people. I think that the stories of, you know, the personal stories, Allison Fraser, I'll go to Allison for a second because Tana can handle this. Her apartment was flooded. because of climate change. New York City, right about 3 days before. And I called her and said, listen, if you can't do it, don't make, you know, somehow we'll figure out, you know, I'll sell my car, you know, and Tana will come out and we'll stick her in a hotel and we'll figure out how to do this. And she said, no, I'm bailing water. It just makes me even more want to do it. My apartment, my house is, you know, the subway's flooded. This is climate change. It's come ashore to me. The story is they all have their own little story. They all have their stories. There was a woman who did a reading right after Tana did the a reading of permafrost. She was almost on her deathbed, and she was recommended in Connecticut to try and bring hope, to see if it really had the hope that we thought it had. And I got a bunch of Yale eyeballs on all of this stuff and dramaturges. And she was in a hospital room. Heather McNeil was basically in a, you know, going for a kidney transplant or some crazy thing, that her life, this was what she wanted to do for me, for these plays. That's, Jean, that's not normal. You know, the story, you could write a book on the actor's input of what, of that. And I mean, you're talking about celebrities, community theater. There's a little girl, Megan Pratt. She was working at Hartford Stage. She was doing Goodspeed Opera House. She was doing the leads in these little community and Lort theaters. Megan, you want to do Young Michelle, a couple lines, a couple scenes. Boom, she's in the city and, you know, getting the American Girl doll, but doing the reading of Starlight. Erin Hill, with her Grammy Award, she plays the friggin' harp. She said, if Tana drops dead, if Allison drops dead, I did the Titanic on Broadway. I can play the harp as the mother, you know, like what could I bring to it? And I said, you know, yeah. So if you get a trilogy, you're making history, because nobody has a climate change trilogy. I didn't even have it. We're borrowing it. That's how I look at it.
There you go. Well, we'll have to definitely get
it.
We'll have to get it in some Next Stage Press volumes before it's over with, and we'll have the entire thing right there, packing on the shelf. See if we can get it in the drama bookshop. So
bookshelf.
What are you working on? What are you working on right now? Are you still working on? Are you working on anything new? Yeah.
Well, so other than rewriting and looking back at permafrost and look at 1969 before I give it to you, because you have like the sense of a star warrior, I just want to make sure that that's that. I was going to be starting One Acts about the oil industry, and now that they've gutted the EPA, I'm not sure that I don't just go back to saying, you know what, the front. A one act doesn't tell the story, not from someone who has a trilogy. Probably. I mean, who needs a one act? You know, I don't do 10-minute plays. I don't do one acts. I wanted to write about the group theater. And actually, I asked Allison if she wanted to, you know, take a look at, working with Hannah at somehow, like I have like a stable. I feel like I'm MG and I'm like, I got the best actress in the world. And, to work on the group theater, because that was in Connecticut called The Group. But the thing is, climate change just keeps coming to the front and saying, you know, Jeannie, you can write about whatever you want. You can do Shakespeare. You can do theater, Greek theater. You can write for Saturday Night Live. You can write for Sesame Street. I'm pretty much working on getting, I feel like, the producer of film that got not as much notice as it needed to, Don't Look Up, he said it changed his life when he realized what he was producing, how important it was. It changed his life. And I almost feel that if I can inspire 100 other playwrights and 100 theaters to actually do theater that isn't the same old, same old, same old dinner theater, nothing against all of the writers that have worked hard, but the times have changed. We're in an extinction. And now's the time to pick the pen up. So I feel like I have like a, you know, a responsibility to get those three plays out and produced and folks writing reviews and the talk. It's what the kids want. It's what the college kids want. It's what the little kids want. It's what the parents want. It's what the grandparents want. The only people that don't want it are, seem to be the politicians in certain areas where, of course, they don't. They'd rather, you know, slingshot us down than to have people caring. Because the protests are out of, you know, they're tangible. New York City shuts down. Climate Week, you couldn't even get in. And the only thing I could think of was, you know, with there's a lot of responsibility to be a serious writer. The Pulitzer Prize, this is like the Kentucky cycle, except it's climate change. It's just a matter of, it's not if, it's when. And I think that's why I really wanted to have Tana Banana here, because she'll probably outlive me by 50 years.
Tana, what
it's
about
like having
you?
It's like having Katharine Hepburn. We care about Katharine Hepburn. So we care about.
We do. Tana, what about you? What are you working on right now?
People can check out Two Ways Home, which is a film that is on a number of platforms. And other than that, just check out Gina's Climate Play trilogy, because it's amazing. Yeah.
Hey, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about, or at least, is there a website for Project Save Our Surf?
Yes, it's projectsaveoursurf.org, O-R-G.
All right, everybody. So make sure that you go out there and drop by, and you can find out all the information of stuff that's going on with Project
Save Our Surf. I'm going to say one thing. Tana Banana is everywhere. She's at Ocean. She's at every, she goes to more fundraisers. She wears more gowns and things than the man in the moon. You know, she knows friggin' everyone. Sylvester Stallone, you name him. Richard Dreyfuss, you like Jaws. Guess who little the banana worked with? You know, everyone. It's part of the Hollywood. She is the Marilyn Monroe as an actress that we all love. And except that she's got the fighting spirit in her and she's not going down with a drug by anybody, you know, or stupid enough to flirt with the president or whatever the reason is. But you know, it's exciting, I think, to have Colorado, Connecticut, New York, you know, all of, it's like a trilogy. It's like a holy trilogy. And I think it's very representative of the climate trilogy, actually, because we're only, you know, one play on its own, it's a one night stand. And it's important, but this trilogy stuff is crazy. And it's really like the Lord of the Rings. I mean, this is the stuff that legend is made of. And you start adding Hollywood to it, and guess what? I don't think we've seen the end of Next Stage Press. I think we've seen the beginning of a whole new frontier. And I would be happier than a clam to take you all the way to the Pulitzer Prize. Again, I know you represent some really great writers, but, you know, I like the challenge. Tana gives me the challenge, Gregory Harry, all these people, of in it to win it. We are not in it to do it. We are in it to win it. And win it in this case means get these plays, get the American theater revitalized, you know, to the point that it's not the fourth time we've seen Our Town. Why?
Well, that's my
I did it twice. Why? Christmas Carol, I did it three times. Why? Romeo and Juliet, you know, I mean, how many times can we do the same old plays? So what you're doing is being a leader and is being, you know, you think people don't want to talk to you. Well, of course they do. The people that know, know. And I think, you know, now you're on the Hollywood radar screen. Wake up. Here we go.
Well, I appreciate that. And I tell you, it is, we are on time here. It has been absolutely lovely talking to both of you. This has been fantastic. I'm so interested to see ultimately where all of this leads. And thank you both for being the leaders that you are and taking this through to, it sounds like that the readings and everything and the responses, everything. And you know what? Let's make this just the beginning. So, all right. On that, Gina Tana, thank you very much for taking some time. I can't believe this has got to be like the fastest hour that I've ever had. I mean, we have sit there that an hour is just gone. So, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And everyone, make sure that you look up all the stuff that we did. The websites are on there. We've got Save Our Surf. You can find Gina all over the place. Gina is basically everywhere. You can find her on Facebook. Gina, do you have a Twitter handle?
I haven't even gotten to all of those crazy things on the little website because I'm busy writing plays.
We're going
to
give you...
Al Gore. I want Greta and Al Gore in the audience to go, that's my girl. I'm going to say
at this point, I'm going to give you one right now. It's going to be at this is Gina's Twitter handle. And that's what we're going to go with. That's good. Anyway, you both are lovely. So everybody, we will catch you next time on the Next Stage Press. So at that point, goodbye, everybody.
That does it for this episode of the Next Stage Press podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you enjoy what you're hearing, please leave us a star rating and a review and let us know what Next Stage Press playwright you'd want to hear from next. Also, feel free to share our show to your theater friends and colleagues. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Shopify, Podomatic, or wherever you get your podcasts, and they are always free to listen to. Also, you can find all of our plays on our website at www.nextstagepress.com, where the first half of our plays are free to read, and licensing info is available there as well. Stay well until next time, and we wish you good health, happiness, and great theater. Goodbye, everyone.